A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel ordered two programming books from Amazon while he's in the US, because getting English language technical books in Israel is a pain. He's been writing Python and TypeScript for a couple of years, and he's been skeptical of learning from books his whole life. But he's hit a point where learning by doing shows its limits. The role he sees for textbooks now isn't syntax. It's understanding how a language actually works. Getting a conceptual vantage point. He wants to know how to get the most out of textbooks that way. What titles are worth picking up for someone deep in agentic AI with MCP, TypeScript, and Python? And what to look for in a book, so it doesn't become deprecated 6 months after you buy it.
This is the exact moment where a developer levels up. You've been building things, you've shipped code, you know how to make stuff work. And then you realize you're solving the same class of problem over and over without really understanding the machinery underneath. A good textbook at that stage isn't a tutorial. It's a map of the territory.
Daniel mentioned Python Crash Course specifically. That's a beginner book. I think he knows that. The question is whether he's getting what he actually needs from it.
Right, and we should talk about that. But first, let's sit with what he's really asking. Learning by doing teaches you patterns that solve immediate problems. You need a route handler. You write a route handler. What you don't get is why Python's data model lets you override what happens when something is accessed with square brackets, or why TypeScript structural typing means two types with the same shape are interchangeable even if they have different names. Those aren't syntax questions. They're design questions. And syntax churns. Python's TypeHint syntax has evolved across three major releases. TypeScript releases a new version every few months, but the type system's relationship to soundness, the way Python resolves attribute lookup, those are stable.
So the book is for the thing that doesn't move.
And that's the first answer to Daniel's question about how to read these things. Skip the syntax chapters. You already know the syntax, or you can look it up. Go straight to the chapters about the data model, the execution model, the type system's design philosophy. In Fluent Python by Luciano Romalho. That's the book I'd recommend over Python Crash Course for someone at Daniel's level. The chapter on the Python data model is chapter 1. It opens with dunder methods. How does your object behave when you call in on it? What happens during attribute access? That's not esoteric trivia. That's the operating system of the language, and every bug you've ever stared at for 3 hours was probably caused by not understanding it.
I've watched you debug. That tracks.
The second edition of Fluent Python came out a few years ago and it covers Python 3W10 features, but the data model chapter would work for Python 3W26 or 3W12. The fundamentals haven't changed. Romalho isn't teaching you what's new in 3W12. He's teaching you how Python thinks.
So that's one title. What about TypeScript? Daniel mentioned he picked up a TypeScript book but didn't name it.
Effective TypeScript by Dan Vanderkam. 62 specific items, each one drilling into a nuance of the type system. Item 7 is about type narrowing, when TypeScript can deduce that a variable is a more specific type based on control flow. That's not a feature that appeared in version 4.3 and might vanish in 5.0. That's how the type checker reasons. Vanderkam explains the structural type system, how any and unknown differ in ways that matter for soundness, how to think about generics as functions that operate on types rather than values. The book works whether you're on TypeScript 4 or 5 or whatever comes next.
And the 62 items format. That's bite-sized enough that you can read one over coffee and then think about it while you're coding.
That's exactly how I'd use it. Don't read it cover to cover. Read item 23, which is about how TypeScript infers types in ways that can surprise you, and then go look at your own code base and find the three places where you've been fighting the inference without knowing why.
Daniel also asked about agentic AI specifically. MCP, TypeScript, Python. What's the book for that?
There's a multi-agent systems book that covers communication patterns, coordination, negotiation protocols between agents that's directly applicable to MCP, because MCP is fundamentally a protocol for agents to talk to tools and to each other. The book doesn't mention MCP. MCP is too new, but the patterns it describes are timeless. Agent communication, orchestration, how agents share state or don't share state. Those are design problems that outlive any particular protocol.
And if you buy the book on the MCP SDK, you've got maybe 18 months before the API surface changes, enough that half the examples don't compile.
Or less. The Register reviewed a book on vibe coding last October, and the review basically said it's already creaking. The tools it describes have moved on, and vibe coding is barely 2 years old as a term. That's the canary in the coal mine for buying books tied to specific tools.
So, the first filter is, does this book explain principles, or does it document an API? If it documents an API, the clock is ticking.
And the second filter, which Daniel asked about directly, what to look for besides good reviews. Reviews are almost useless for this. A 5-star review tells you the book solved someone's immediate problem. It doesn't tell you whether the book will still be relevant in 3 years. What you want to look for first, does the book have a second edition or later? A second edition means the publisher thought it was worth updating, which means it sold, which means it had staying power. Fluent Python is on its second edition. Effective TypeScript, I think that's still first edition, but Vanderkam has kept it updated through revisions and it's held up. Node.js Design Patterns is on its fourth edition.
Node.js Design Patterns, that's the third title.
Yeah, and it's relevant for Daniel because if you're building MCP servers in TypeScript, you're writing Node.js on the back end. The fourth edition covers modern JavaScript and TypeScript patterns, things like the reactor pattern, which is the event-driven architecture underneath Node. That's a concept. The event loop doesn't change when the framework du jour changes. It covers streams, which are how you handle large data flows without blocking the event loop. If you're building an agent that processes streaming responses from a language model, you need to understand streams. The book explains the pattern, not just the current API.
So we've got three concrete recommendations. Fluent Python for Python's data model. Effective TypeScript for the type system. Node.js design patterns for the server-side architecture. And the multi-agent systems book for agent communication patterns.
That's a solid shelf. And notice what's missing. No framework books. No book on FastAPI, no book on Next.js, no book on a specific AI SDK.
Which brings us to the checklist Daniel asked for. How do you evaluate a book so it doesn't become deprecated?
Let's build it. Item 1. The book focuses on language fundamentals or design patterns, not frameworks or SDKs. If the title includes a version number or a framework name, be suspicious. Item 2. It has a second edition or later, or it's been updated within the last 2 years for the current major version of the language. Item 3, the author has a track record of conceptual writing. Ramalho has been teaching Python for decades. Vanderkam was on the TypeScript team. The authors who write about principles tend to keep writing about principles. Item 4, the book covers patterns and anti-patterns, not just API reference material. If the table of contents looks like a list of function signatures, put it back. Item 5. The exercises make you think, not just type. If the exercises implement a decorator that logs function calls, rather than use the logging library to log function calls, that's a good sign.
That fifth one is underrated. A book that asks you to implement the thing rather than use the thing is teaching you the concept behind the thing.
And that's the difference between a book that teaches you to fish and a book that hands you a fish that's already starting to smell.
Let's go back to something Daniel said. He's been using these languages for years. He's skeptical of books, and he still ordered Python Crash Course, which is a beginner book. I think there's something there about how experienced developers sometimes don't know what level they're at conceptually.
You go to the table of contents, find the chapter on something you use daily but don't fully understand, and you read that chapter. Then you put the book down for 3 weeks. Then you hit a bug that makes you think of something in Chapter 7, and you go read Chapter 7. What he needs is the book that explains why a list comprehension creates its own scope, but a for loop doesn't, or why default arguments are evaluated at function definition time, not at call time.
The Gotchas book.
But the data model didn't change. The protocol model didn't change. The second edition updated for 3.20, but the conceptual skeleton is the same one Ramalho built in 2015.
That 7-year relevance window is itself a signal. It's exactly what Daniel's asking about. How do you evaluate durability before you buy? So what's the right way to build conceptual understanding of something that's too new for textbooks?
You read the specification. MCP has a spec. It's not long. The spec tells you what the protocol expects, how clients and servers exchange messages, how tools are discovered, how resources are accessed. That's the conceptual model. Right. The beginner reviewer is evaluating whether the book taught them Python. Daniel needs to know whether the book will still be worth pulling off the shelf in 2029 when Python 3.15 is out and MCP has been through 3 protocol revisions. Those aren't in the MCP spec because they're not MCP's job. They're design problems, and the multi-agent literature has been thinking about them for decades.
So the spec is the what, and the textbook is the why and the how.
Fluent Python, 1st edition, 2015, 2nd edition, 2022. 7 years. That's a book that gets revised when the language's thinking changes, not when the patch notes drop. Reading the SDK source tells you how the protocol is actually implemented, what assumptions the implementers made, where the edge cases are. A book that releases a new edition every 18 months with a subtitle like Updated for Python 3.2. That book is probably just swapping code samples.
You've just described a 3-layer approach. Spec for the contract, textbook for the design patterns, source code for the implementation details. That's a framework for learning anything new, not just MCP.
It's how I learned HTTP. Read the RFC, read a book on web architecture, then read the Apache source. The tools change, but the method doesn't.
Let's circle back to the evaluation checklist. There's one more thing I'd add, and it's about the author's voice. A book that's going to last is usually written by someone who's annoyed. They've seen the same mistakes made 1,000 times, and they're writing the book to make it stop.
Ramalho's chapter on decorators has that energy. He's not just explaining what a decorator is. Effective TypeScript by Dan Vanderkam. This is the TypeScript book Daniel should own. Vanderkam doesn't organize the book around TypeScript features. He organizes it around the type system's design rationale. There's a whole discussion of type narrowing, when TypeScript can deduce a more specific type from control flow, and the advice isn't use the as keyword here. It's here's how the type checker thinks about control flow, and once you understand that, you'll know when to trust inferred types versus when to add explicit annotations.
And that transfers across TypeScript versions.
Completely. TypeScript 5.S added new features, const, type parameters, decorators, all of that. But the type narrowing logic, the structural typing model, the discriminated union pattern, those are the same. Vanderkam's book works because he's teaching you to think like the type checker, not teaching you which flags to pass. You're learning a dialect.
The conceptual understanding is the invariant. The syntax is the dialect.
A book that lists type annotations you should use gets deprecated the moment the language adds a better annotation. But the concepts, asynchronous I/O, structured output parsing, tool calling protocols, state management across conversational turns, those are stable. In 24 hours, for dummies. Any title that frames mastery is something you can schedule.
LangChain's API has changed so many times. The documentation has whiplash.
And that's exactly the kind of thing you don't want to buy a book about. Unless the book is explicitly about the patterns LangChain implements, not the library itself. A book called Building LLM Applications with LangChain is a bad investment. Huge red flag. If the book is called Django for Python Developers or React with TypeScript, it's coupling its shelf life to a framework's release cycle. Django 5.0 will make half the book obsolete.
The title tells you which one it is. If the framework name is in the title, it's a framework book. If the concept is in the title, it might be a concept book.
That's almost too simple, but it works as a first pass.
Daniel's in a unique position. He's ordering books from Amazon while he's in the US, because English technical books are hard to get in Israel. He's making a deliberate choice about what goes in his luggage. That's a forcing function for quality. You don't want to haul a book across the ocean that's going to be worthless by the time you unpack.
If you don't understand how Python's Asyncio actually works, not the syntax, the concurrency model, you're going to build brittle servers. That's how you actually absorb the concepts.
There's also something about physical books and conceptual learning. I find it harder to skim a physical book. With a PDF or a website, I jump around. With a book, I read linearly, and linear reading is better for building a mental model. The author has structured the argument to build on itself.
That's true for the kind of book we're recommending. Fluent Python is structured so each chapter builds on the previous one. You can't skip to chapter 19 on dynamic attributes and properties without understanding chapter 1 on the data model. And this connects to the last evaluation criterion I want to mention. The second read strategy. Buy books you've already outgrown.
Explain that.
If you've been using Python for 3 years, you've outgrown Python Crash Course. Buy it anyway. Read it once for the conceptual map, then shelve it. In 2 years, when Python 3.5 is out and you're wondering whether your mental model has drifted, pull it off the shelf. Flip through the table of contents. See if the on-ramp has changed.
Let's talk about the multi-agent systems book a bit more. You mentioned it covers agent communication patterns. What specifically?
The core patterns are things like ContractNet protocol, where an agent announces a task and other agents bid on it. That's directly relevant to MCP if you're building systems where multiple agents need to coordinate. A book that was conceptually honest in 2022 is still conceptually honest in 2026. The syntax examples might need updating, but you don't need the syntax examples. You need the thinking. And there are patterns for negotiation, for task decomposition, for handling uncertainty when an agent's information is incomplete.
None of those patterns care whether the agent is implemented in Python or TypeScript, or whether the communication happens over MCP or HTTP or gRPC.
Does it explain the design rationale behind the tool discovery handshake, or does it give you a code sample and move on? A book that explains the why of a protocol's design will stay relevant even as the how changes.
Because the design constraints don't change as fast as the implementation.
JSON RPC was chosen for a reason. Statelessness was chosen for a reason. Those reasons will still be true after the next protocol revision.
Alright, let me try to pull this together into something Daniel can actually use when he's staring at a search results page. You've got four signals. Edition pacing. Look for years between editions, not months. The principles over patterns test. Open to a random chapter and check whether the author is explaining mechanisms or listing recipes. The framework, coupling red flag, if the title mentions a framework, the clock is ticking.
And the Python and TypeScript books give him deep fluency in the languages he's wiring it up with. That's a complete curriculum.
You mentioned Node.js design patterns earlier. Let's give that one its due. What's in there that someone building MCP servers needs?
If the author thanks beta readers who are practitioners, working developers, not just academics or other authors, the book is more likely to have real-world conceptual grounding. Fluent Python's acknowledgments are basically a who's who of the Python community. These are people who build things, and they pushed back on the manuscript. The streams chapter covers back pressure. What happens when data is arriving faster than you can process it? If your MCP server is streaming large responses from a language model, back pressure is a real concern. Against the kind of reality Daniel lives in, production code, tight deadlines, weird edge cases. A book that's been through practitioner review has already had the "that's not how it actually works" conversation.
Hilbert's been quiet through all of this, and I know he's got opinions about book publishing.
Oh, he definitely does.
Let's go back to the checklist and make it concrete. Daniel asked what to look for besides good reviews. Here's the full list we built. 1. The book focuses on language fundamentals or design patterns, not frameworks. Of course you did. 5. The exercises ask you to implement, not just use. 6. The author sounds like they've been in the trenches. You can tell from the preface.
I'd add a 7th. Look at the publication date and check whether the book has been updated for the current major version of the language. A Python book from 2018 that hasn't been revised is going to be missing type hints entirely. That rule is basically what we've been describing, just from the publishing side. The book doesn't need to cover every new feature, but it needs to have been checked against the current version of the language so it doesn't teach you things that are now wrong.
Do you still have any of those books?
And that's a signal about the book's long-term value. If it's been updated once, it'll probably be updated again.
I want to address something implicit in Daniel's prompt. He ordered Python Crash Course, which is a beginner book, and an unnamed TypeScript book. There's a chance he's underestimating his own level because he's self-taught. Self-taught developers often assume they're missing fundamentals that beginners learn, so they reach for beginner books. But what they're actually missing is the conceptual layer that intermediate and advanced books provide.
That's a really important distinction. A beginner book teaches you the syntax and the basic idioms. An intermediate book teaches you the model underneath the syntax. An advanced book teaches you how to extend the model. Daniel doesn't need the syntax, he needs the model. Python Crash Course is going to spend 100 pages on if statements and for loops. He's been writing those for years. He should skip straight to fluent Python.
So a concrete suggestion for Daniel. Keep Python Crash Course if you want a reference for the basics, but add fluent Python for the conceptual understanding you're actually after. And if the TypeScript book you ordered is a beginner book, swap it for effective TypeScript.
And if you're building MCP servers, add Node.js design patterns. That's 3 books. That's a year of deep reading if you do it right.
The acknowledgements test holds up, even if the book's main job is holding up a monitor.
Here's my method. I read a chapter, and then I go find my own code that uses the thing the chapter was about. If I just read about Python's descriptor protocol, I open up my codebase and find every property decorator I've ever written. I'm not sure buy books for their structural integrity is the takeaway Daniel's looking for.
That's the active reading part. You're not just consuming the book, you're using it as a lens on your own work.
The second thing is, I try to break the examples. The book shows you a descriptor that validates a value. I try to write one that does something the book didn't anticipate. A descriptor that logs access, or one that caches a computed value. If I can extend the example, I've understood the concept. If I can't, I reread the chapter.
The third thing, and I think this is under-discussed, is that I don't take notes. Taking notes makes me feel like I'm learning, but I'm really just transcribing. Instead, I close the book and try to explain the concept to someone else. If I can't explain it clearly, I didn't understand it.
The Feynman technique. And the podcast is basically us doing that in public.
Every episode is us trying to explain something we just read.
I know where you're going. AI coding assistance.
Yeah. If Copilot or Claude can generate the syntax for you, and they're getting better at that every quarter, do programming textbooks become more valuable or less? The point is to produce something from the understanding, not just consume the text.
You're not typing the for loop, you're telling the AI what the for loop should accomplish and in what context. To do that well, you need the conceptual model. You need to know what to ask for. The book isn't a novel. Effective TypeScript is even more amenable to random access. 62 items. Read the ones that bite you first. If you've been confused by type inference, read those items. If generics are your pain point, read those.
The table of contents is a diagnostic tool. Flip through it and notice which items make you think, I don't know what that means, or I've been burned by that. Read those first.
Before we move on, I want to name something we've been dancing around. There's a tension in Daniel's prompt between wanting conceptual understanding and not wanting to waste time on things that will be deprecated. That suggests something about where programming books are heading. The next generation might not teach syntax at all. They might teach system design, protocol thinking, composition models, the things you need to know to direct an AI effectively. The books that become obsolete fastest are the ones closest to the metal, the framework-specific cookbooks, the build an app with version X tutorials. The books that last are the ones furthest from any particular implementation.
The abstraction spectrum. Assembly language books from the 1980s are still useful if you're writing assembly. A book on React version 1608 hooks is already archaeology. The more abstract the knowledge, the slower it rots.
Daniel's two goals, conceptual depth and longevity, are really the same goal. Look for the most abstract book that still has practical examples. That's the sweet spot. Fluent Python hits it. That's the through line. The books that survive are the ones where the code is evidence, not the argument.
If you take one thing from this, it's that the value of a programming textbook flips after you have experience. The beginner reads for syntax and projects.
I was a technical editor at a publisher in the 90s, mostly C++ books, templates, the STL, that kind of thing.
The durability test is whether the book teaches the why. Addition history, principles over patterns, who's in the acknowledgments, whether the title mentions a framework, those are all just ways of asking the same question.
For about 4 years, we had a rule. If a book wasn't updated within 18 months of a major language release, we pulled it. didn't matter how well it was selling. The logic was that an out-of-date book does more damage to the publisher's reputation than the revenue is worth.
If the human is increasingly the architect and the AI is the builder, the conceptual model becomes the whole job, and books are still the densest way to transfer one.
The owner had been burned by a book on Korba, sold well for 2 years, then Korba died, and the book was worthless. He had warehouses full of them. We used them as monitor stands in the office. Every desk had a stack of 3 or 4.
The Korba book became office furniture.
I still have one. It's under my monitor right now. The book is useless. But Chapter 7 is on design patterns for distributed object systems. That chapter is still good. The patterns didn't die with Korba. They just moved to different protocols.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
I've read that chapter maybe 5 times over the years. Never read the rest of the book. The patterns are things like the broker pattern, the factory pattern for remote objects, how to handle partial failure in a distributed system. Same problems people are solving today with different acronyms.
The broker pattern is basically what MCP does. A broker that connects clients to tools.
I don't know what MCP is, but if it involves connecting clients to tools, then yes, the broker pattern applies. The book was published in 1996. The pattern hasn't changed. The acronyms changed.
You've got a 30-year-old book propping up your monitor, and the only chapter worth reading is the one about patterns.
That's the thing about technical books. The chapters that teach you how to use a specific tool are dead weight the moment the tool changes. The chapters that teach you how to think about a problem don't age. My publisher knew that. He just couldn't sell a book that was only Chapter 7.
Did you edit any books that survived?
One on design patterns. It's still in print. I didn't edit that one. I just copy-edited the index. But it's still selling. Everything else I worked on is gone. The C++ template books, the MFC books, the COM books. All gone. The pattern book is still there because it wasn't about any particular technology.
What was the pattern book?
It was a patterns book. They all blur together after a while. The point is, if you're buying a book and you want it to last, flip to a random page in the middle. If the page is full of code samples that reference a specific library or framework, put it back. If the page is explaining an idea with a small code example that illustrates the idea, it might be worth keeping.
That's a better heuristic than most of the checklist we built.
It's the same heuristic, just faster.
You've been using a Korba book as a monitor stand for how long?
11 years. The monitor has changed twice. The book is the same book.
I'm going to think about that for a while.
The book is exactly the right height. That's all I care about.
The open question I keep coming back to is what happens to all of this as AI-generated code becomes more common? If you can ask an AI to write the code, does the conceptual understanding matter more or less?
I think it matters more. The AI can handle syntax. It can generate the boilerplate. But it can't make design decisions. It doesn't know whether your agent system should use a blackboard architecture or a contract net protocol. It doesn't know whether your async implementation is going to deadlock under load. Those are human judgments, and they require the conceptual understanding that textbooks provide.
The AI is the learning by doing partner. It helps you ship. The textbook is the learning why. Partner. It helps you think. You need both.
The AI's knowledge is frozen at training time. The book on your shelf doesn't go stale the same way. You can reread it with new context and get new insights.
I think we're heading toward a world where the textbook becomes more valuable, not less. The syntax-level knowledge gets commoditized by AI. The conceptual knowledge becomes the differentiator.
Daniel's ahead of the curve on this one. He's feeling the limit of syntax-level learning and reaching for the conceptual layer. That's the right instinct.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing and for the monitor stand story.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you got a timeless programming book that saved you more than once, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'd love to hear about it.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro. With text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.